formal capacity. No absconding to the countryside to dream with philosophers. No allowing advisers like Halil Pasha, publicly executed months ago in a demonstration Radu had not attended. And his ilk to gain favor, and therefore power. Radu wondered whether the distance Mohammed had created in public would continue even in private, or would he simply communicate with Radu through messengers, remaining forever separate.
"How is your sister, Radu Bey?"
Radu looked up surprised. The woman who had been part of Murad's court had spoken. She was a paradox of harsh elegance. Everything about her was precisely fashionable by European standards, her elaborate dress and hair acting as a barrier between herself and the world. She sat up straight, her skirts awkwardly pulled around her, rather than leaning on an elbow like many of the other diners. "I'm sorry, I do not remember your name." Radu smiled in apology.
"Mara Brankovic.
I was one of Murad's wives." "Ah, yes. You negotiated the new terms of Serbia's vassalage." It had been her parting move, using an offer of marriage from Constantine to negotiate her own freedom and better rights for her country. Mohammed had admired her for it. Without conscious thought, Radu found himself staring again at Mohammed. He dragged his eyes back to Mara.
"What brings you to the empire?"
She turned her gaze toward Mohammed. Her look was affectionate.
"A leader who recognizes my value. I am here as an advisor on European issues. I help with handling the Venetians, the Serbians, obviously, and a troublesome little country you are quite familiar with. And familial with." She laughed lightly at her own joke.
"So you are not asking after my sister as a social courtesy?"
"Oh, I am. Social courtesy is the heart of my role here." Her tone was pleasantly wry. "It is amazing what one can accomplish through polite inquiry. Besides, I quite liked Lada, though she was foolish to pass up a marital alliance with Mohammed. She would have done quite well."
Radu looked at his plate, now filled with tiny pieces of flatbread he had torn apart.
"Quite well would never have been enough for her."
Mara laughed. Abana snagged her attention to point out how much worse unleavened bread was, and Radu was again left to his own thoughts, which, to his surprise, did not linger on the person on the dais.
"Mara," he interrupted, "do you have any contacts in Cyprus?"
She frowned thoughtfully.
"Not personally, but I am certain I know someone who will."
"Why?"
"I am looking for news of my wife and my friends. They fled during the fall of the city, and I have had no word of them since."
Mara put a hand on his. Her dark eyes were sympathetic and serious.
"Write down their names and any details that matter. I will set all my resources on it."
"Thank you," Radu said. "I have been searching, along with Kumal Pasha, and..."
"He is very handsome,"
Abana said it in the same tone she would use for talking about the quality of metal for casting cannons or remarking on the weather.
"He does not seem like he would ever be violent, and he has been a widower for some time."
Radu could not quite follow the change in conversation.
"Are you courting him?"
Obana gave him the same glare of disgust she directed at the spiced meat.
"I meant for Mara. I have neither use nor time for a husband."
Mara shared a long-suffering look with Radu.
"Obana worries that my childbearing years are dwindling quickly.
She speaks of it.
Often."
She sighed heavily.
"Very often."
Radu nearly laughed, but was hit with a pang, remembering Obana prying into his own private life and lack of babies with Nazira. Nazira should be here, at his side. No, she should be at Fatima's side. It was his fault she was not.
"You could marry Radu,"
Abana said, thoughtful.
He is quite young for you. 18 now? But he married his first wife very young, so he does not mind. He is very kind, and does not have a temper. I used to hear girls gossiping about how handsome he is, with his large dark eyes and his prominent jaw.
She peered at Radu in a way that made him intensely uncomfortable.
I suppose I understand what they meant. He is tall and healthy, at least. And with his wife missing, he is lacking for company.
Radu choked on the piece of bread in his mouth. He stood, unable to sit for a meal in this place that had taken so much from him. If Mahmed wanted him here, he would be here. But he could not pretend everything was normal. He could not have conversations about his future as though his past were not looped around his neck like a noose, choking him with regret and sorrow. Just then, the banquet hall doors opened. A procession of unarmed men, roughly dressed under fine black cloaks, entered, dragging and pushing large wooden boxes. Mahmed's Yanacheris stood at the ready, eyes narrowed in observation. A servant hurried past them and bowed at the base of Mahmed's dais.
"They would not wait," he said, trembling.
The leader of the men bowed as well, sweeping one arm out in exaggeration. His boots were filthy and his clothes dusty. They must have just arrived. Radu looked closer and realized all the men wore cloaks with the Dracul family seal on them. It was a dragon and a cross, taken from the Order of the Dragon. It felt wrong seeing it here. Radu's already fragile emotions recoiled at the symbol of his family, of his past. The man spoke Valachian, not Turkish, as would have been appropriate.
"We bring a gift from Larda Dracul, Vivode of Valachia, to his honour the Sultan. She sends her respects and asks that in the future you make certain your men offer her the level of respect she deserves as prince."
With that, the man turned on his heel and left the room. The other Valachians followed him out. They walked quickly. Radu looked up at Mahmed, who met his gaze, raising an eyebrow. Mahmed did not speak much Valachian.
"He said it is a gift. From Larda. She sends her respects and asks that your men respect her as a prince in the future."
"What is it?"
Mahmed asked. Radu shook his head in a small motion.
"He did not say."
Mahmed had gotten even better at keeping his expressions guarded. Radu did not know how Mahmed felt about the surprise or how he felt about Larda. The Sultan gave away nothing. He gestured, and a servant ran forward with a lever to pry open the lid of the first box. As soon as it was lifted, he cried out in shock and dismay. He covered his nose and mouth with one arm and backed away. Mahmed moved to get off the dais, but Radu held up a hand in warning.
"Let me."
He stopped a few paces from the boxes. The smell released with the lid gone was enough to tell him he did not want to see what his sister had sent. He leaned over to peer inside anyway. A corpse stared up at him, dried blood in lines of agony down its sunken face. As far as Radu could see from his vantage point, a metal spike had been driven through the turban, right into the head. Radu leaned away to hide the horror from his sight once more. Keeping his eyes on the far wall, he replaced the lid.
"Clear the room," he said.
No one moved. Mahmed stood, gesturing sharply. The room emptied rapidly, only his Yanacheri guards and one personal servant remaining. He stepped down from the dais and joined Radu next to the first box. There were 10 more. Mahmed reached out.
"No," Radu said. "You do not need to see it."
"My ambassadors?" Mahmed asked.
"Yes."
Mahmed stared down at the box, then swept his eyes over the rest of them.
"And there is no letter with them?"
"No."
Mahmed pointed to one of his guards.
"Catch the men who delivered these. I want a full account of what happened."
The guards sprinted from the room. Mahmed turned
his purple silk robe swishing through the air.
Come with me.
He glided through a separate, private door. Radu followed. They entered a sitting room with high ceilings. Tiny jeweled windows let in light but were too small for anyone to break in through. As soon as Radu was inside, Mahmed bolted the door behind them. There were no other exits. Radu faced a wall bearing Mahmed's elaborate, beautiful tura, the Sultan's own seal and signature. Around it in gold Arabic script were verses from the Quran. Without turning around, Radu said,
"This is why you called me back, then." "Because of her."
Mahmed hesitated. Radu could feel the other man just behind him, close enough to touch. Then Mahmed sat with a sigh on one of the low sofas.
"I did not know this was coming."
"You should not be surprised."
"She always surprises me."
Radu clenched his teeth so hard his jaw ached.
"I cannot help you with her. I cannot, I will not, go between you and my sister. You will have to find someone else."
Radu turned to leave. Mahmed stood and grabbed his arm. Radu looked down at Mahmed's hand, each finger weighted with a jeweled ring. Mahmed was heavy with privilege and power. Radu remembered the lightness of their shared childhood. If the two boys, who had met at a fountain in Adirna, who had clung to each other against the cruelty of the world, saw themselves now, they would see strangers. All the years had built a wall of silk and gold and power and pain between them. Mahmed dropped his hand from Radu's arm.
"I did not ask you here to help me with Lada."
"Then why did you?" Radu turned to face him.
"Because..."
Mahmed wrapped his own arms around himself, shrinking.
"Because I am building an empire, and turning this city into the jewel of the world, and becoming the sultan my people need. And it is so... lonely."
His voice broke on the last word. Gone was the cold assurance of the sultan, the calculating intelligence that last year had sent Radu away as a spy. The untouchable hand of God was replaced by the boy at the fountain, the friend of Radu's youth, the foundation of his heart. Radu opened his arms, and Mahmed fell into him, burying his face in Radu's shoulder. Radu held him close, taking his own deep, shuddering breaths.
"I need you," Mahmed whispered.
"I am here," Radu answered.
"Halil amassed too much power."
Mahmed was on the floor of his private chamber, lying on his back and staring up at the ceiling. Radu lay next to him, shoulder to shoulder. No sultan and bey. Just Mahmed and Radu.
"My father was too permissive, too willing to let others take over much of the business of running the empire. It led to corruption and waste and weakness. So I keep myself separate. Let no one think they have a greater portion of my ear or my confidence. Soon I will have a palace complex made, all the rooms and walls circling out in rings from the center. I will be there, and everyone else will revolve around me, just as I am at the center of the empire, and everyone else exists to serve the empire through me."
"It does sound lonely," Radu said softly.
"It is. And it will be. But I cannot put my own needs ahead of the needs of my people. They need a strong sultan. They need me to be the hand of God, not a mere man. And so I must set aside the things that I want, my own comforts and relationships, to be what my people deserve."
Radu thought of his own life, of the things he had sacrificed to be the person others needed him to be. Most often, to be the person Mahmed needed him to be. Could he do the same as Mahmed? Set aside the things he wanted, the things of his heart, for the good of the empire? He closed his eyes. He did not know where his heart was any more. He could not set aside something he could not find.
"I want you to stay here with me," Mahmed said, his voice tugging Radu back. "Be my friend in the midst of the madness."
Radu knew he should say yes. He should not ruin this closeness. But he had spent so much of his life pretending. He did not wish to any longer.
"You know what people will say. What they already thought. If I am back at your side, Halil's old rumors will resurface."
Radu felt Mahmed's head turn toward him, felt Mahmed's dark gaze heavy on his cheek. Swallowing against the emotion pounding in his chest, Radu turned his own head toward Mahmed's, their lips a breath apart. Mahmed was watching him, his dark eyes careful and searching.
"Let them say what they will. They cannot harm me, and I will not let them harm you."
"And Lada?" Radu asked, dragging his sister into the space between them, where she always was. Mahmed frowned. He looked back up at the ceiling, but linked his arm with Radu's. The move felt very deliberate, like a step in a dance.
"We three were always meant to be together. I have you. She will come back to us."
"You want her to? Even after that?" Mahmed's silence was answer enough. He would forgive her this murder of his envoy. Radu should have been surprised. He was not.
"And if she does not come back to us?"
"Well," Mahmed let the word hang heavy in the air above them,
"at least I will always have you. I am the prettier one, after all."
Mahmed's laugh filled the room. It used to fill Radu, too, until he could feel it in his veins. But the feelings he had now were echoes of the ones he had before. He did not know if they would grow again. Mahmed laced his fingers through Radu's, and Radu lay still beside him, thinking of how often he had imagined what that would feel like. He had been wrong. Time had taken even this from him, because with Mahmed's fingers tangled in his own, he remembered another finger tracing wounds on his hands. Grey eyes in place of dark ones. The love he had found when his first love had been lost. Now Cyprian was lost. Would his feelings for Mahmed return? Did he want them to? 5. Bulgaria. The ashes of the village were as cold as the dawn around them. Everywhere the ground was dusted black instead of white, like some hellish snow had fallen. Lada, wrapped in furs, crouched down. She took off her gloves and ran her hand through the ashes that remained of the village. Her village. Valahia's village. Her hand came away stained with dull black.
"How many people were killed?" she asked.
They had ridden here immediately after seeing Mahmed's envoy off. She had come straight down the border to make certain no other villages had been attacked. Along the way, she had picked up witnesses. A peasant from the next village scratched his head, eyes wandering as he mentally calculated.
300?
Who was the boyar in charge of this region? She should know. But she had never been able to care about the boyars unless they were giving her trouble. He shrugged.
"Never met him."
Lada looked at Stefan. He nodded, slipping away. He would find out. And there would be consequences for the boyar, both for failing to protect the people in his care, and for failing to report this attack to Lada. She should not have heard about it from Mahmed's people. She closed her eyes, letting herself imagine Mahmed's reaction to her message. It filled her with something sharp and hot, like anticipation.
"What are you smiling about?" Bogdan asked.
Her eyes snapped open. "Nothing." Standing, she brushed her hands off on her trousers,
the ash that had looked black against the snow now showing up grey against the black cloth. A shift in perspective changed everything. When will Nikolai be here?
Within the hour.
Nikolai had been gathering all her soldiers. When he arrived, it would be with over 3,000 men, and the special supplies she had been stockpiling. Lada squinted at the rising sun, let its brightness warm her face. 300? Very well. We will kill 3,000 of them. Every Valahian death will be answered tenfold.
We will have to go deep into Bulgaria to kill that many, Bogdan said.
Then we will go deep. No one would be able to doubt her ferocity, her commitment to her people. And no one would attack Valahia without thinking very carefully about the consequences from now on. It would be a lot of bodies, but she looked at them as an investment. Kill thousands to save thousands. 2 days later, the boyar who had failed his people clutched his chest with his torn and bleeding hands. The hole he had dug, one of hundreds since Stefan brought him to their camp, was ready. Two men took the stake and leveraged it into the hole, tipping it up. The body slumped at the top, a gruesome coat of arms for Lada's push into Bulgaria. Lada looked down the road, lined with a forest of bloody reminders. "How many is that?" she asked Bogdan, who rode next to her.
1,500, 1,600.
They had broken through the border villages as swiftly as a river smashing through a dam. Everyone was swept up in their wake. No one spared. But it was not quite right. So few of them had been her actual enemies. She spared no love for Bulgars. They were too weak to break from Ottoman rule, and were thus as culpable as anyone. But they were not Turks. Her point that her borders were inviolable had been made. But she wondered if she could make another point, too. A point that the protection of the Ottomans was no protection at all. The point that her way was better. Nikolai eyed the stakes with weary distaste. Only a handful of casualties among our men.
Good. And does word spread?
He shook his head. No one is left to send out warnings. My scouts report no mobilization of the Turkish forces at any of the nearby fortresses.
Lada rubbed her eyes. They were irritated from the smoke of burning cottages and fields. This is all the protection their loyalty to the Sultan buys them.
How can they not see it? How can they not see that all their bowing and scraping to Mahmed benefits them nothing?
On to the next village, Bogdan asked.
Lada shook her head.
Where are the Turkish troops?
There is a stronghold 2 hours' ride from here. Perhaps 1,000 men are stationed there for easy deployment around the region. Another one, with 500 men, is half a day's ride from there.
Lada nodded, turning her horse from the corpse-lined road.
No more Bulgar deaths. I want the rest of my stakes baptized in the blood of Mahmed's men.
Taking their first fortress was easier than Lada had expected. The Ottoman troops here were lazy, unused to resistance or fighting. She had sent her Yanacheri-trained men on ahead. By the time they reached the fortress, the guards at the gate had been slaughtered, and everything was wide open, waiting for them. She lost 127 men, and added their deaths to the count required in vengeance. Before they impaled the Ottoman troops, they stripped them. The guards at the next fortress opened their gates without question when they saw the uniforms of their fellow Ottoman soldiers coming toward them in the night. Lada rode at the front and killed both gate guards herself. Most of the Ottomans were sleeping, slaughtered in the chaos and tangle of their sheets. Those who were awake fought well. Her men fought better. The next day they reached a small city. It was made almost entirely of wooden structures,
with a high fence encircling them. Two gates, one at the front and one at the back, let people in and out. Word had preceded them. Hundreds of Bulgars were outside the city gates, prostrate.
"Please,"
a man said as Larda rode up. He did not look up at her.
"Please, do not kill us."
"Who protects you?" she asked, looking from side to side with her arms extended, palms up. "I thought this country was under the protection of the Sultan." The man trembled.
"No one protects us."
Larda dismounted. She gestured impatiently for him to stand. He did, shoulders stooped, balding head respectfully lowered.
"Are you Christians?"
He nodded. "Would you like protection?" He nodded again, shivering though the day was warm enough to hint at spring. Larda lifted her voice.
"Any Christians this close to Valahia are close enough to be my people. I have farms and land and safety for any who go back with me, which is more than the Sultan can offer you. But our city, our homes, your city and homes were sold by your prince to the Sultan, just as your lives were."
Again Larda looked around.
"I see neither your prince nor your Sultan here. There is only me."
The man nodded rapidly.
"Yes, yes, come in with me, for food and wine, and I will—"
A woman nearby stood up. She was gaunt, but had a strong face and a stronger spirit than the man, indicated by the lift of her chin and unflinching gaze.
"Do not go into the city," she said. "Infidel soldiers are waiting to ambush you. I saw them on my way out."
The bold man let out a low moan of despair. The air suddenly smelled of piss. Larda smiled at the strong woman.
"Thank you. I will see to it that you have home, land, and animals to start your new life as a Valahian."
The woman smiled grimly, bobbing her head in a bow. Larda examined the wall. There was no one watching that she could see. They were probably all hiding. The city did not have a tower where she could be observed.
"Nikolai, secure the back gate. Quietly."
He rode away with several hundred men to circle the city. Larda raised her voice.
"The offer remains for those who wish to take it."
The Bulgars pushed themselves up off the ground. Many carried children. Eyeing Larda's men warily, they walked past them and onto the road toward Valahia. She could be generous, too, and word of that would spread. Not as quickly as word of her violence, but both had merit. Larda turned back to the man.
"Go inside. I am sorry.
"Go back to your city." He let out a quick, terrified sob, then turned and walked slowly back through the gate.
"Close it behind you,"
Larda called. He did as he was asked, a flash of his eyes wide with terror, the last thing she saw before the gate shut. Larda gestured toward it.
"Let us help them keep it secure."
A dozen of her men hurried forward with hammers, nails, and a few solid planks. Nikolai would be doing the same at the other gate.
"Send them a warm greeting."
As the burning arrows arced overhead into the wooden city, Larda turned to watch the peasants making their long walk toward a new home. One she had given them.
"How many dead?"
Larda asked Bogdan 5 nights later, after hitting every major Turkish stronghold along the Valahian border. Around her campfire sat Nikolai, Stefan, Bogdan, Iskra, the woman from the wooden city who had warned them and been taken on as a regional advisor, and some of her higher-ranked men. Bogdan shrugged.
2,000 Bulgars, 1,000 Ottomans from the first fortress, 500 at the second. Anyone's guess how many were in the city we burned. We shot at least 1,000 as they tried to climb the walls to escape."
Iskra grunted.
"They came from all the garrisons around the city.
Probably 2,000. 2,500.
Bogdan nodded, ticking cities off on his fingers. So in addition to that, we have hit Oblusita and Novo Selo, Rahova, Samovit, and Gigan. The entire region around Kelia, all told 25,000 dead. Mostly Turks, though many Bulgars as well.
Larda laughed in surprise. Such a number was unfathomable.
At least the leaders like Matthias of Hungary, who wanted to play politics to rule behind walls, to fight with letters instead of weapons. But she had known what she could accomplish with a few thousand men. The Ottoman forces were scattered and lazy, too used to being unchallenged. If the Ottomans had been prepared, Larda's forces would have been slaughtered. But it had been easy enough to quickly cut their way up and down the border between Wallachia and Bulgaria. She had been lucky. No, she had been smart. She knew she would not face such easy odds again, but she would be smarter than her enemy. Do the unexpected, at every turn. This had worked once. It would not work again.
Is it enough? Bogdan asked, fingers still extended in calculating the volume of terror they had accomplished.
It would never be enough. It was enough for now.
Yes,
she heard Nikolai sigh in relief. He dropped his head from shoulder to shoulder, rubbing his neck.
Do you want me to leave men behind?
He asked.
Are we expanding?
No, we are deterring. I have no interest in conquering, only in letting others know the borders of Wallachia are inviolable. No one will attack my villages again. Not unless they want war.
Nikolai grinned wearily.
I think that message has been sent.
Good. I have new messages to send now.
Larda stared into the fire, watching it devour the darkness around it. 6. Constantinople. Radu still found peace in prayer. During the siege, he had missed mosques, missed praying in unison with his brothers all around him. It was a comfort returning to that routine. He could not bring himself to go to the Hagia Sophia, though, even now that it was a mosque. He had too many memories there to truly lose himself to praying. Instead, he visited other mosques through the city. They were mostly converted Orthodox churches, though a few new mosques were being built. His brother-in-law, Kumal, joined him for most prayers, and, as promised, Radu also joined little Murad and Messi in prayer. Coming back with them from afternoon prayer, Radu was surprised to meet Mahmed. The Sultan was so rarely in the streets. Radu bowed low. Mahmed gestured for him to join them. One of his Yanacheri guards dismounted, offering Radu the horse.
Where are we going? Radu asked, careful to keep his horse a step behind Mahmed's for appearance's sake.
He had been in Constantinople for a week, and while in private, they were as close as ever when Mahmed had time to see him. In public, Radu knew the importance of maintaining distance. Mahmed needed to be apart, needed to stand above. Radu would not disrupt that.
Urbana has some new hand cannon design she wishes to show me. I am certain she would be happy to see you too.
Radu snorted a laugh.
You do not know her very well, do you?
Mahmed turned his head, smiling at Radu over his shoulder.
I cannot imagine anyone would ever be unhappy to see you.
His gaze lingered on Radu's face. It felt almost as though he was watching for Radu's reaction, more than wishing to continue to look at Radu. Mahmed did that more and more often lately. He would say some little shining thing, or touch Radu on the shoulder, or the hand, or even the cheek, always watching, studying, cataloguing what actions or words triggered which reactions. Radu did not know what to make of it. He offered Mahmed a smile now,
which seemed to satisfy him. Over their past week together, though, Mahmed had not spoken again of Lada. Whether he had discussed her message in private with other advisers, Radu did not know. But it seemed as though, for the time being, Mahmed was content to let the issue be buried alongside the bodies of the men Lada had sent back. Envoys were often casualties of aggression between countries. Mahmed had killed Emperor Constantine's envoy a year ago. Cyprian spared only because he had taken Radu and Nazira out of Adena. But Mahmed had to be bothered by the loss and the intent behind it. Maybe he was planning something and thought Radu would object. Or maybe, with Constantinople so recently settled, Mahmed did not want to antagonize Lada until he absolutely had to. Either way, the memory of what Radu had seen in the box stayed with him, wriggling beneath the surface of his skin. The spike, the face frozen in agonized death. His sister had done that, and she would have to be answered. When she was, Radu did not know how he would feel or what he would want to happen. He had chosen Mahmed's side the year before when Lada asked for his help. He would, it seemed, have to make that choice over and over again for the rest of their lives. He had changed his faith, his life, even his name, but he could not change or escape his sister. Radu was still thinking about the problem of Lada when they arrived at their destination. The world swirled around him, frozen atop his horse. He stared at the foundry where he and Cyprian had spent the long night melting down silver and making coins. Radu! Startled, Radu blinked rapidly and turned toward Mahmed. The other man stared expectantly at him.
You look as though you have just woken up, Mahmed gestured to the foundry. Do you know this place?
Radu nodded silently, hoping Mahmed would not inquire further.
What did you do here?
Mahmed leaned eagerly toward Radu.
You have told me so little of what you did in the city during the siege. You were a stranger to me those months. I want to hear all of it. Did you sabotage their attempts at building an arsenal?
Radu rubbed his eyes, leaving his fingers covering them for a few seconds too long for the gesture to appear casual. No. They never had a hope of amassing enough cannons to meet you that way.
Then what did you do here?
Radu straightened his shoulders, staring at the door behind which he had spent a deliriously hot and confusing night with Cyprian. He remembered the shape of the other man's shoulders, the lines where his torso dipped down to his trousers, the feelings in Radu's own body that he had hidden behind the table between them. But before that, the laughter, the pure devious fun of it all, sneaking around with his beloved false wife and the friend they were already betraying.
We stole silver from the churches and melted it down to make coins. You and Nazira.
And Cyprian. Mahmed abruptly straightened in his saddle, no longer leaning toward Radu. The eagerness in his voice had shifted, just like his posture.
What were you making coins for?
Radu sighed, letting the memory slip away.
To buy food. People were starving. How did that help our cause?
Radu dismounted and paused, stroking his horse's flank. He did not look to see if Mahmed was studying him.
It did not help. Not you. And in the end, not them. But it felt right at the time.
Radu walked inside the foundry, blinking at the sudden dimness, his conflicted past, confusing present, and unknown future were all harsher and more difficult to breathe through than the blistering air inside. Just like silver melted down, its impurities burned away. Radu felt himself as molten and unformed. He could pour himself into any shape. He could fill a mold as Mahmed's dearest friend and confidant. He could fill one as Radu Bey, powerful force in the Ottoman Empire. He could probably even return to Larda and fill one as the lesser Dracul once again. But the mold he found himself longing for, the shape that felt truest, could not be formed, because the people he wanted to form it around were lost to him. Maybe forever. Larda had always known exactly what shape she would take. She had never let it be determined by the people around her. But Radu could not escape the need for love, the need for people in his life to help him see what he should and could be. Larda shaped herself in spite of her environment. Radu shaped himself because of it. He would stay in the city because Mahmed still shaped some part of him. But he could not become what Mahmed wanted or even needed him to. And he feared that a refining fire would reveal he had never been silver to begin with. He was simply dirt and impurities, burned away to ash while desperate to become something worth valuing.
7. Turgoviste. Larda entered her reception room with Bogdan at her back and Nikolai at her side. Two men were waiting for her, one, the king, she knew, and the other, her cousin. Matthias Corvinus stood and threw a sheaf of parchment on the stone floor.
"You monstrous little fool," he snarled.
Larda smiled.
"Now, now,"
said the other man, Stephen, king of Moldavia. He leaned casually in his chair, one leg stretched in front of him, and eyed Larda with curiosity.
"Cousin,"
Larda acknowledged him with a dip of her head. "Cousin?" She did not know much about him,
other than his penchant for picking fights and winning them.
She already liked him better than Matthias. But as much as she would have preferred to meet only with Stephen, it was good that the two kings had arrived at the same time. It made things quicker. Stephen sat up straight.
"It is good to finally meet you.
Your mother is, I care nothing for my mother." She did not want to bring that woman, and her weakness, into this discussion. Stephen needed to see she was nothing like the woman who had given birth to her. Larda took the chair opposite the two men. She sat as a man did, back straight, legs apart, arms crossed over her chest. Matthias sat back down, anger in his stiff posture. He had probably hoped for more of a reaction from her. She was determined to give him nothing that he hoped for. When they had last been together, he had been almost a king, and she fighting for the chance to be prince. Now she was prince. She would not let him forget it.
"I assume you got the same letter I did," Matthias said to Stephen.
Raising an eyebrow, Stephen pulled out his own sheaf of parchment. He cleared his throat, then read aloud.
"I have killed peasants, men and women, old and young, who lived at Ablusita and Novo Selo, where the Danube flows into the sea, up to Rahova, which is located near Kelia."
He paused, looking up.
"How is Kelia this time of year?"
"Quite pleasant," Larda said, not failing to notice Stephen's pointed question. Nor had she forgotten that Moldavia had a vested interest in Kelia. She had mentioned it specifically for that exact reason. Over the years, it had shifted between Bulgaria, Valachia, and Moldavia. Now it was hers, because she had taken it. Stephen lifted an eyebrow in amusement.
"I am happy to hear it. Continuing more locations, following the Danube. Ah, yes, this is my favorite part. We killed 23,884 Turks, without counting those whom we burned in homes or the Turks whose heads were cut off by our soldiers. Thus, Your Highness, you must know I have broken the peace with Mahmed."
Stephen lowered the letter, laughing.
"I should say you have." "Why would you do this?" Matthias demanded. We cannot afford a war with the Ottomans.
Larda met his intensity with a cool gaze. We cannot afford not to have war with them. They take our fortresses, they take our villages, they take our land, they take our children. I, for one, cannot bear the cost of their stewardship any longer. I will have Valahia, free of them, and I have proved it is possible. They rule because we allow it. No more. Stephen tapped the letter on his knee.
Your numbers are impressive.
I did it all with only 3,000 men of my own.
Matthias grunted in disbelief. You exaggerate on one end or the other.
Larda pulled out a dagger and cleaned her fingernails with the tip. We moved fast and surprised them, fortress by fortress. We never face more than 1,000 men at a time. So no, I do not exaggerate, and you know it is the truth. Do not pretend you are not aware of precisely how many men I have at my disposal, Matthias, and do not do me the dishonor of implying I would falsify my accomplishments. Those of us who actually do things have no need of falsehoods. Matthias rose like a storm once again. Stephen stood, too, holding out a hand.
Calm yourself. Think it through. She has handed a devastating loss to the Turks, and, as she pointed out, she has proved that such a thing, however surprising, is possible. So tell me, cousin, why are we here? What else do you have planned?
We are going to crusade, Larda said.
Matthias sat yet again, his chair groaned in protest of so much movement. Constantinople has already fallen. Even you cannot be so delusional as to think you can take it back.
I care nothing for the woes of Greeks and Italians. Let Mahmed have what he has taken from them. But let him never again take anything from us. We crusade for Europe. We crusade to prove our borders are our own. Immovable, inviolable, that never again will he take Christian land from us.
Matthias was listening, his eyes narrowed. I will not fight for Valachian land.
I'm not asking you to fight for Valachian land. I will fight for my own land. I am simply asking you to fight your own battles for once in your pathetic life.
Matthias's sword was half-drawn before Bogdan was at his side with a knife pressed against the king's neck.
Larda let the knife stay there for the time being. This is what we do. Antagonize Mahmed. Harass him. If Stephen does the same, we give Mahmed three fronts, three battles he does not want. His empire depends on stability. He will not risk everything for borders he does not need. We force him to withdraw from our lands.
Larda waved one hand, and Bogdan moved the knife but did not back away from looming over Matthias. So you want to work together? Coordinate? Stephen asked.
No. If we give him a single front, it is that much easier for him to defeat us. I want us to do everything separately. No clear target, no attainable path for defeating us. I used a small, unexpected force to slaughter his men up and down the border. Our best plan is to defy plans.
Matthias rubbed his throat, his glare as sharp as Bogdan's blade. But Mahmed is not in Hungary. I'm not going to attack other countries. What good will I do you?
Deal with the Transylvanians. Convince them to work with me. I need their numbers.
Stephen laughed, idly spinning an empty wine goblet on the arm of his chair. I have read some of their work on you, Larda Dracul. Very creative. Did you see the one about the picnic? Nikolai asked. Stephen nodded. Oh, yes. Charming. King Matthias will have his work cut out for him.
I am certain he is up to the task, Larda said.
She was certain of no such thing.
And your other role is far more important, Matthias. We need money. The only person who can give us the funds we seek is the Pope.
The Pope? His threatened throat forgotten, Matthias leaned forward, eyes narrowed shrewdly as the conversation turned to something he was interested in. What makes you think the Pope will give us money?
He fears Islam invading Europe. I wrote him about my victories in Bulgaria, and he likes me very much.
Matthias laughed meanly.
That is because he does not know you.
Exactly. I have neither the time nor the temperament to pursue that advantage. Will you?
The Hungarian king steepled his fingers.
You will have to convert to Catholicism.
No,
he will not support you if you are still Orthodox.
Why were men always trying to claim different parts of her? Her body, her name, her soul? Why should they care where its allegiances lay? She waved a hand crossly.
Then I have converted, you can inform him.
I think it's rather more complicated than that,
Nikolai said. If the King of Hungary writes to the Pope that I am Catholic, I am Catholic.
Lada had converted to Islam in much the same way, thanks to Radu's political maneuverings. That had been to save their lives. This was to finance war. Besides, they could not touch her soul in the end, despite all demands on its loyalties.
Your people will not like your conversion, Stephen raised his eyebrows meaningfully.
Lada followed his gaze to find Bogdan aghast. Bogdan held his Orthodox faith almost as dearly as he held Lada.
My people, Lada said, glaring at Bogdan, will like it because I choose it, and everything I choose is for the good of Valahia.
Bogdan looked down at the floor, chastised. Matthias's eager hunger had not quite left his face, though he tried to smooth it away. Lada was struck with a sudden, powerful longing for Matthias's father, Hunyadi. An honest man, a true man, a man who would have been invaluable on the battlefields to come. But all she had was Hunyadi's son, so she would use him if she could. He smiled tightly.
It may work. With the loss of Constantinople so fresh, I think I can convince Rome to send us gold. Perhaps a lot of it.
Good. We all know what our duties are, then.
Stephen grinned rakishly, holding his goblet out to Lada in a toast.
Disrupt stability. Petition for gold. Provoke the greatest empire on the face of the earth. He paused. This is going to be fun.
8. Constantinople.
Over the next 2 weeks, Radu kept to the palace, the least haunted part of the city for him. He spent his time writing letters and consulting with Mara on where they could look for Nazira. Mara's smiling patience nagged at him. The calm and soothing way she spoke terrified him that there was, in fact, no hope. He would not give up hope. Not for Nazira. Not ever. Radu was invited to sit in on all the meetings that involved Europe. He wondered if it was to give some legitimacy to his place in Mahmed's court, though he felt useless. Unlike Mara, he had not kept up any of his ties with his home country, aside from Aron and Andrea Dinesh, whom he met with occasionally. Theirs was a relationship destined for discomfort. His sister had murdered their father. Their father had murdered Radu's father, and now his sister sat on the throne they had equal claim to. He avoided them and everyone else as much as was polite. The only peace Radu found was in prayer, but even his studies of Islam could not distract his itching, straining heart. Every time Radu thought he had found a place in the world changed around him, and he was once again left alone. Today, Mahmed was at the head of the room on an elevated platform, along with several other of Mahmed's advisers. Radu sat nearest to him. But no one was allowed on the platform, not even Radu, despite how close they were behind closed doors. Some things never changed. He rubbed his eyes wearily. He did not know how much longer he could stand play-acting. It had kept him alive through his cruel childhood, navigating the Sultan Murad's capricious court, and behind the walls of Constantinople during the siege. But when Nazira and Cyprian left, he had lost the one person who truly knew him,
and he had lost the other person whom he would have liked to let try. He tried to pay attention to the council going on around him, but he had a hard time focusing. Mara was detailing some nuance of diplomacy to give Mahmed more trading advantages with the Venetians. It felt deeply unimportant.
"What about Nazira?" Radu asked when there was a lull in the discussion.
"What about her?"
Mahmed asked. "Has there been any word? Can we send out more men to search? We know they left the city in a boat. Perhaps if we looked up and down the coastline..."
Mahmed shook his head.
"It would be a waste of resources. She left with a nephew of the Emperor. He knows what value Nazira has. If we go searching, they will only see our desperation and increase the eventual ransom demand. Our best course of action is to wait and see what they ask for."
He noticed Radu's horrified expression and held up his hands in placation.
"We will pay it, of course, whatever they ask. But we have to be smart about how we portray her value."
"Cyprian would never do that."
Mahmed's face was carefully neutral. "Cyprian. Ah, yes. I had forgotten his name."
Radu did not believe him, and he could not accept that this was Mahmed's solution. To simply wait and see what happened. Radu had been waiting for months.
"If we have had no word of Nazira, they must have run into trouble. If you would give me the men, I can..."
The door burst open, and Kumal Pasha, Radu's beloved brother-in-law, hurried in. Radu wondered if he had somehow been drawn by discussion of his sister. Radu stood, grateful. Kumal would support his petition for more resources. Kumal bowed.
"I apologize for interrupting, but we have just received word from Bulgaria."
He held out a sheaf of paper. A servant took it, then shuffled toward Mahmed, bowing and holding it out. Radu itched to keep pressing about Nazira, but Kumal was here on other business. Radu would speak with Mahmed later, and he would bring it up again when next they were alone. Mahmed had been so evasive about expanding the search that Radu wondered now if it was because of Cyprian. Could he be jealous? Mahmed looked over the papers, his normally composed expression shifting as his eyes widened the more he read. When he looked up, it was directly at Radu.
"Lada, she has attacked Bulgaria and killed tens of thousands."
Radu's heart raced as though he were the one attacked.
"Why?"
She had murdered the envoy. And before they had even sent a response, she had done this.
Mahmed stood. "Kumal Pasha, Mara Brankovic, Radu Bey. Stay. Everyone else, get out."
There was a rush and flutter of robes, and soon the four of them were alone, save Mahmed's guards.
"Come," he retreated into his private room.
Radu followed, the space feeling oddly larger with more people in it. Perhaps because Mahmed alone was so much more overwhelming than Mahmed with other people present. Radu leaned against a wall as Mahmed paced. Kumal and Mara both sat on a long, low bench. "You cannot let this stand," Mara said, breaking the silence. Mahmed looked as though he wanted to throw something, but everything in the room was expensive, exquisite, his own property. His fists clenched and unclenched at his sides.
"I do not understand this. I gave her the throne."
Radu shifted uncomfortably.
"But you did not." "Not really. You never sent her men or aid. She took it on her own. You can see how she feels that she is not a vassal. Valahia is a vassal state. She knows this." "You did not respond to her murder of the envoy either."
Mahmed gave Radu a pointed and wary look.
"You think I invited this?" "Of course not."
Mara shook her head.
"It does not matter.
She has to be held accountable."
Radu ran his fingers along the edge of his turban. Normally the cloth felt soothing, but he found no comfort now. Tens of thousands
Bulgarians, no less. It made no sense. What was she trying to accomplish?
Did she take any land?
Kumal had been whispering to Mara, filling her